Hey everybody, it's Laura. So I don't know about you, but I've been feeling kind of sluggish lately, and it's made me really want to focus on feeling better. And I realized that feeling better isn't just about hitting the gym or eating perfectly. It's really about finding those little routines that fit seamlessly into your life and give you that extra boost. For me, that's been daily Nutri-Greens. Remember those mornings when grabbing coffee was the only option and a salad by lunchtime felt like a distant dream? For me, daily Nutri-Greens changed that. It's a powder packed with everything good. Essential greens, fruits, prebiotics, and probiotics. All of the ingredients you need to feel your best. But the real win is that it's so easy to integrate into my day. I just put a scoop in water, do a quick blend, and I'm good to go. You can use it in smoothies, water, whatever you like, but it's delicious and convenient, and honestly, that's a win in my book. So check out Daily Nutri-Greens from Equilibria. You can find it at myeq.com.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free to play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create positive change in the world every day by being a conscious consumer. I'm your host, Laura Alexandra Wittig, founder of Brightly.eco, and I started this podcast a few years ago because I wanted a place to talk about the gray areas around sustainability and how being a conscious consumer can be challenging and confusing, but it's totally doable. So join me in the name of reducing waste and living positively in the name of the planet. Together listeners, I say this like every episode, but I am really excited about today's episode because it's a topic that we actually do get questions about, but it's one that we haven't really delved into. And as you know, we love to talk about food, the food supply system, and how to make that more eco-friendly and sustainable on Good Together. So come with me now to a world where fish and vegetables can actually engage in a mutually beneficial ecosystem. And so today I'm joined by Cody Parker. He's the founder of Drop the Beet Farms. And we're going to talk all about the world of aquaponics, which is a system that's really transforming the way we grow food, but it's also really holding a promise of a more sustainable and I'd say interconnected future for our planet. So welcome, Cody. I wonder if you can provide just like a really brief intro about yourself and your company.
Hey, yeah. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Cody Parker, and I'm the founder of Drop the Beet Farms. We're an aquaponics consulting company. We custom design, fabricate, and service living food ecosystems for schools, nonprofits, and commercial spaces. Our motto is, we are farming without limits.
Awesome. And that's, it's interesting. I feel like there's like so many different mottos you could have, especially since we're talking about aquaponics, but tell us a little about like what aquaponics actually is and what made you get into this line of farming obviously there's a lot of different ways you can farm. So like, tell us a little bit about like what stood out to you, after you tell us about what aquaponics is.
Yeah. So, aquaponics is arguably the most sustainable way that you can farm. It is basically a symbiotic relationship between fish, bacteria, and plants. We're basically combining aquaculture, which is fish farming, and we were attaching it to hydroponics, which is growing plants without dirt or soil. When you combine the two, you get a super efficient system where the waste products from the fish are actually serving as fertilizer for the plants, and the plants are cleaning and filtering the water for the fish. So you're able to grow a protein source as well as a vegetable source. So to me, it's the epitome of sustainable farming. I've been fascinated with it since I was in high school. I've always been obsessed with ecosystems, and I joined a farm when I was in organic CSA when I was in high school, and I had this guy named Farmer Dave. He was this hippie dude from Hawaii, he changed my life, man. It was, yeah. I'd get home covered in dirt, and I was like, this is what I want to do. I kind of had that aha moment, figuring out what I wanted my career to be. This is kind of like the organic farming movement. And then it kind of led its way once I found about aquaponics. I was trying to look online, trying to find all these different ways that we could grow crops sustainably, and aquaponics just really hit home for me. So I've been on this journey ever since that moment.
That's awesome. And yeah, I feel like a lot of people that I talk to on this podcast, like everybody arrives at their current sort of sustainable job or sustainable mission in different ways. But I think it's really interesting to hear that it went back as far as high school for you. Like, that's huge. And you know, well, so when you're thinking about, like, you know, the benefits that aquaponics offers, like, let's talk a little bit more about that, you know, over conventional farming, so we can kind of set the stage, and then and then we'll really get into one of the coolest reasons why we asked you on this podcast, to see like how you're actually applying this technology to make the world a better place. So before we get into that, yeah, like what are the benefits compared to just like traditional, you know, dirt in the ground farming?
Yeah, there's a ton. The biggest one is we use a tenth the amount of water compared to soil grown crops, and that's because it's a recirculating ecosystem, and all the water is contained. If you were to think about watering like a tomato plant outside, you're kind of hitting it with a hose. You can guarantee that not all that water is reaching the soil structure, or just dissipates into the soil structure before the root zone can take up that water. In our systems, it's completely contained. So the only water we're losing is through evapotranspiration from the plants. So we use 90% less water compared to soil grown crops. We use a tenth of the amount of space. We're able to grow vertically. So instead of growing out like in a field, we're able to grow up. So we can really multiply the amount of crops that we can produce per square foot, which is great for urban areas. There's no weeding in our systems, which is fantastic. As like an organic farmer or organic gardener, the biggest deterrent for people having their own gardens is how much weeding they have to do. In this system, there's no weeding, which is incredible. You pick what plants go into the system, and it won't have to compete with any other plants. For that reason, we don't need herbicides either. On a commercial scale, there's less pest issues. So you can actually be completely pesticide free because you're in a controlled environment.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's huge. It's kind of like it's built as a system that is able, it just naturally removes all the issues that you have with conventional farming, which is like the plants are outside, they're susceptible to pests. Watering is like very inefficient for conventional farming. When you remove the dirt aspect of it, it's huge. So that's a lot of these are the same benefits that hydroponics has. But we're aquaponics, so we actually attach a fish tank to it. So we're actually able to grow a protein source at the same time that we're growing plants. So it's kind of like a two for one.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question when you mentioned, you know, hydroponics versus aquaponics. So you just did a great explanation there. But for listeners who aren't quite as familiar with it, so explain this to us. Okay, so we're visualizing a vertical kind of like tower-ish type thing where we're growing up top, but then tell us more about what's underneath, like where the fish are and sort of like, what are the fish eating? Are they just eating like the root system, or like, how does that work?
Yeah, so the only input into aquaponics system is fish food. Okay. So you can do like a blended fish food. I raise tilapia in my systems, and they're omnivores. So we actually we'll do like vermiculture. We'll raise worms. You could feed the worms to the fish, and we feed the worms the root system from the hydroponic system. You can feed tilapia entirely a diet of algae and duckweed. So you have a lot of different options for ways that you could feed the fish, but that's the only real input is the fish feed, and then you get fish protein, and then you also get the plants at the same time.
Okay, that's super interesting. Yeah, because again, like when we think about all the systems that we typically cover, you know, on this podcast, like, you know, we like to say like nothing is free in terms of sustainability. So there's always going to be trade-offs. I actually love to hear about some of those trade-offs, but it sounds to me like when you have a system where it's like a 2-for-1, both from a fish and a plant perspective, that's super interesting. And it sounds like maybe by adopting a system like that, maybe you're able to cut back on some of those trade-offs, like potential waste, et cetera, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about, you know, how you decided to, you know, start getting into this space from a sustainability and social impact perspective, specifically, you know, what, like around the specific crops that you chose to work with. And then we'll talk about the tilapia.
Yeah. So, we, with the aquaponics system, most aquaponics system, the best crop that you can grow is, lettuce. Because lettuce is a vegetative crop. Typically in aquaponics, you're getting a very high nitrogen. It's very high in nitrogen, so you want to grow a lot of vegetative crops. Yeah. So we pick lettuce, leafy greens, herbs do fantastic. And they're basically acting as active filters for the fish tank. So they serve that purpose. So if you get the proper ratio, you're able to grow enough plants to keep the water clean enough for the fish in that constant balance.
Very cool. And so like from that perspective, you know, when we're thinking about the way that the, you know, the system is working, like, are there limitations? Like, are there, you know, specific, you know, yeah, like limitations that you're operating within on a daily basis?
Yeah, so aquaponics, it's very complicated because it's a delicate balance between the fish, two different types of bacteria, and plants. They're okay. All working in a chain. Basically, the fish waste is supplying fertilizer, is supplying a food source for the bacteria that are actively converting that fish waste into fertilizer for the plants. And they all have their ideal temperatures, pH, just general water quality, metabolism rates. So it's such a balance. It's like a musical instrument that you got to know how to hit every single note along the way. If you don't do that correctly, you kind of break the chain, and then just could start seeing fish dying. You could start seeing deficiencies in the plants. So it's a very delicate system. So it really comes down to being able to design a system correctly, and then being able to understand how to monitor it and the upkeep of it. You're kind of creating an ecosystem, but you're in control of making sure that ecosystem stays balanced, as opposed to outside, you kind of let nature do its thing. We're kind of creating the system, and then it's up to us to kind of constantly monitor how much food you give the fish, maintaining the filters, testing the water quality. There's just a lot of monitoring that's required of the system.
Yeah, absolutely. And so tell me a little bit more about the genesis of Drop the Beat Farms. Like you told us a little bit about how you yourself personally was interested in, you know, in this technology, even from a high school perspective. But what made you want to found a company? And tell us a little bit about like what the goal is with Drop the Beat Farms, specifically as it relates to school systems and nonprofits. Like that's really, we're super excited to get into that piece.
Yeah, so my mission, if I were to kind of put it, my goal is for every household to be able to grow all the food for their family within their own house.
Great.
Picture like dedicating a, like one whole room, even like a small, like 10-foot by 10-foot room to growing all the food that you need for your household. And it to me, it's just, I'm fascinated by it because that just fixes everything. Cause we're such it's such a global supply chain. And with food, it's not good to get food shipped miles and miles away. It starts losing so much nutrient content by the time it reaches you. Being able to produce food in your own house kind of like breaks you away from that chain, and you're able to be so self-sustaining. So I'm fascinated by using this technology to be able to create that type of ideal scenario. And to get people aware about it, I think the best way to do that is to start teaching the younger generation. So we go to schools and I'll teach classes like thousands of students get access to the idea of aquaponics. And then by the time they're going to college and become adults, they are more aware of this technology. So the whole goal is we start going to schools and we teach students about aquaponics because it's a fascinating learning tool. But at the same time, they're able to kind of push the technology forward. But first, you have to make them aware of it. And aquaponics, like probably like 5 years ago, no one knew what aquaponics was. I mean, I talked to so many people trying to tell them what aquaponics has been for the past. Like we're a 7-year-old company, but everyone kind of knew what hydroponics was, but they didn't know what aquaponics was. So it's kind of like creating that awareness so that people can further this technology, because the technology gets better the more eyes that you have on it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so, yeah, like I said, we hear a lot about different technologies and, you know, things that are moving the needle forward for sustainability as it relates to the food supply system. But one of the things that we thought was really cool about what you're trying to do is you are really trying to get these types of systems into our school systems. And specifically when we think about, you know, a lot of the problems that are going on in this country with education, one of those problems is diet. And actually, I'm sure have you seen the memes where people like compare the school lunches across the world to the United States? Have you seen that before? It's like insane.
Oh, I haven't.
No, you have? Okay, so we'll include some links to those. We'll probably post some on social afterwards. But like,
it's crazy. Probably a nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy. Like, I know in France specifically, they have like every community co-op run school, which a lot of them, I mean, that's just kind of how they're run there. They like literally vote on the menu every month. Like it's like a thing, like a parents come in and they're like, just like obsessive with it. And when you think about our school system, like it just varies wildly depending on state and just general like location pieces. But I think we can all agree that like our kids in school right now are not getting nutritious lunches. And it's just a really big problem. And so one of the reasons why they're not getting these, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why, but one of the reasons is cost. So I'm curious to know, like, tell me a little bit about like tilapia, like why you specifically picked tilapia, because I think that's really interesting. And then tell me a little bit about like how you're trying to get tilapia ingrained into the school food system chains.
Yeah. So, it's so I remember even like when I went to high school, it's just like it's disgusting, the food that like you wouldn't normally eat, but you're like, it's your only option. I definitely like it's so crazy the type of food that cafeterias are still feeding to kids. And also there's this huge like mentality of just like students in general of like, I don't want to eat, I won't eat like lettuce, I like steak kind of mentality. So a lot of our systems we put inside cafeterias, so that students, as they're eating, they can watch the lettuce grow every single week. They can see the tilapia growing throughout the entire school year. We start the tilapia as baby fry, in the beginning of the school year. And then at the end of the school year, they get to harvest the tilapia. So we'll invite like a local seafood restaurant. And they'll come in, they'll teach the kids how to fillet the fish. So the kids are filleting fish, and they'll do an annual fish fry, invite the whole community. They'll fry fish, they'll make fish tacos, they'll add cilantro that's growing fresh from their aquaponics system and make these amazing tacos. They could do it as a fundraiser, but it's really great to bring the whole community together and also be connected with your food.
Yeah. And specifically, like, you're saying that, like, you know, from a student, I guess, palate perspective, like, tilapia tends to be something that's, like, less picky for them, right?
Yeah, so tilapia are fantastic. And it's so funny. It's not fair at all how much bad representation tilapia has gotten. So tilapia are fantastic fish. They're one of the most nutrient rich food, or one of the most efficient protein sources that you can get. The feed conversion ratio for them is 1-to-1, which means for every pound of feed that you give a tilapia, you get 1 pound of meat. Wow. In contrast, yeah, cattle is 6-to-1. So it's one of the most inefficient. Chicken is about 2-to-1. But if you think of fish, and specifically tilapia in a aquaculture system, it's one of the most efficient forms of protein that you can get. So it's very sustainable in that aspect. They're amazing to watch. They're like, they're always look like they're hungry, so they're always swimming up and engaging with you. They'll interact with you, and they'll start recognizing the type of individuals that feed them, so they get more excited about certain individuals than others. So they're really great fish to work with. They don't taste fishy, and they're very high in amino acids. The problem is they get such a bad rep because they can handle very poor conditions because they're a very hardy fish, which is great. But newspaper reports came out that they're raised in very far away areas in bad conditions. They're being fed questionable food, and the water quality that they're in is gross. So people always say, like, oh, tilapia is a dirty fish, and they'll always tell me, like, oh, tilapia, that's a dirty fish. And I'm like, look at this fish tank that this fish is swimming in. It's the water is pristine. We have a advanced filtration and UV sterilization system, and then it grows through the plants that take out nitrate, and it comes back as clean water. And like, these fish are grown in cleaner conditions than they can be grown in the wild. It's just upsetting that a fish that can handle, that is very hardy. It's not a fishy fish. You could season it however you like, and it would taste delicious. It's so efficient to grow. Can be named a dirty fish just because of the way that it's treated. Anything can be mistreated. Any type of, you can get steak that you don't know where it's coming from, but it's landing on your plate, you're eating with a fresh salad, but it's coming from CAFOs that are coming from the middle of America. And we don't really talk about that as much as we're quick to say that tilapia is a dirty fish. So I think it's, I'm trying to kind of flip that on its head by showing you the water conditions and making it, people realize that it's not really the animal that you're using, that you're growing. It's how you're growing this animal, and how you're producing your food and where your food is coming from and knowing who your farmer is. So it's kind of a tool to help people realize, like, oh, it's knowing where my food is, knowing who's taking care of the system, and seeing for yourself what this food actually looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is, again, one of those things where, I mean, first of all, I don't feel like we eat enough fish in our diets, like, across the United States. Like, obviously, you're on the West Coast, you know, there's going to be, you know, you're probably going to be exposed to, or either any of the coasts, honestly, you'll be exposed to a little bit more. But I grew up in Texas, and there really wasn't a whole lot of, you know, opportunity to eat fish. And that's right. Another thing that I think is really cool about the technology that you're talking about, because we're talking about, you know, something that can be implemented anywhere, right? Like, you could literally do this in the desert, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So it's farming without limits. We can put a system anywhere. I have systems that are in hallways. I have systems that are in main foyers, systems that are in cafeterias. All you need is a wall. We can grow food anywhere. And that's what I'm really trying to point out, and using this type of technology, you're able to actually produce food anywhere, and all you need is a water source and an electrical plug.
That's huge. And I think, again, like, so yeah, there's like the issue of not eating enough, I think, fish. And the other thing is, you know, trying to understand where these fish come from. And on the point, I guess I was trying to make was when you were discussing like how tilapia is quote unquote traditionally seen as a dirty fish, which is totally unfair. Even so, even if somebody had that prejudice in their mind, when we're talking about getting it from a source like an aquaponic system, I mean, we know exactly what that fish is eating, right? Like, it's in a very controlled environment. Yeah. And it's something that I would imagine, and actually, here's a question for you, because I'm going to imagine this, but maybe that's not true. Like, you know, I would imagine that the quality, is the quality better from an aquaponic system versus just like a traditional fish farm where they're like not treated super well? Like, I would imagine this is more humane and also results in a better product as well.
Yeah, definitely. So we are able to, yeah, a lot of it is, I keep my fish in a glass tank. So you know, it can't look dirty. We have them in schools. We have them in main foyers. They're kind of like bragging points of the school. And saying like, look at this awesome system. So it has to be super clean.
Yeah.
So the maintenance of it, it's just like, they are the most pampered fish. Whereas if they were like an aquaculture system, they pack it as dense as possible. For our systems, we have to give them enough space to kind of like socialize. You know, there's so many people looking at these fish every day that, I mean, I'll get calls being like, hey, a fish is swimming kind of funny, or like, this one's all the time. They're like, they call me like, they look hungry. I was like, no, they're fed just fine. They just always look hungry because they know that you're going to feed them. They
That's
know that
right.
You're the weak one. It's like, there's just a lot of eyes on this system. So it requires you to be more concerned about the fish. We supply gravel for our fish tanks. We provide underwater plants so that we can create like a natural aesthetic for the fish. And they actually will breed actively in our systems, which is a good sign that you have a very good growing system. So they actually have space to create nests. They'll create gravel nests, and they'll start displaying mating behaviors with the other fish. And it's just one of those things where, like, you know how different the taste is between grass-fed cattle versus like a CAFO piece of steak. The quality is very obvious. So there is definitely, there's no studies that I have to show because aquaponics is a relatively new concept. But you could just guarantee that you have a better quality product that is probably more nutrient dense. And also, as you said, like more ethical to raise.
Yeah. And so I guess like, I mean, we've kind of talked about the aquaponics approach in general. We've talked about like some of the benefits and, you know, some of the things that you've uncovered during your founding of this company. But one of the things you just said is something that I kind of wanted to ask a little bit more about, which is specifically about the impact on the schools. So we talked about how, yes, like tilapia and this type of system can really impact the, you know, what's going on their plate. But yeah, like you just mentioned, there's some of the systems are available for people to see. They like walk in the school. So like what school districts is this available in? And like, how are the students involved? Is it like their 4-H club? You know, like who is helping maintain this? Or is it just your company? Or I'm curious to know like how it fits into the school ecosystem in general.
Right. So we have a lot of the Beach Coast systems because the mission actually hits really well with like the local water quality. A lot of this is just, it comes down to like understanding the importance of water quality to like a fish ecosystem. So we have a lot of the beach schools, all the way as far south from like Lavalette Elementary School. We could talk about some of the big ones. West New York Middle School.
Okay.
They have a aquaponic system in their main foyer. And it is just awesome. It grows 300 plants from that system. You can see the tilapia growing. The principal there is a diehard fisherman, so like he's looking at those fish every day. He's like, I can't wait to eat those fish, kind of thing. Rumson, Forestdale School, they have a whole ag program that we have set up. That also, they also have a shiitake mushroom log farm and a apple orchard that I consulted on it and installed. Patterson, Joseph A. Topps Middle School. That school, they have an aquaponics lab that I set up. And it's so funny because this is, aquaponics is a relatively new concept. I mean, if you Google it, a lot of people just have like systems in their backyards that they're trying to grow systems from PVC pipes and a tote, which is fantastic. I encourage people to do that. Yeah. But that's as far as it goes. We're the only company that builds full scale aquaponics systems that match aesthetics. They look beautiful. There's schools that can do these systems themselves if a teacher wants to do it, but there's so much trial and error that goes into these systems that if you do one thing incorrectly, you have like a tragedy, and then people become very dissuaded to doing aquaponics in general because they think it's too hard, or, oh, we tried that, but it looked dirty. We are a full-scale design, fabrication, and service company, so we take care of everything. A teacher's got to teach, and they don't necessarily have time to be scrubbing the filters or like cleaning the algae off the tank or keeping up with these systems. So typically we'll partner with that teacher who wants to get an aquaponics system in their school. They'll like write a grant or propose to their school district. There's a variety of different ways to fund it. Everyone just kind of gets on board with it because it's such a great idea. And then we'll service the system. So we take care of it. And when we come in to take care of it, we work with that teacher to bring the classroom of students in to work on the system with us. And we'll provide exercises. So it creates this ongoing relationship where we're like the cool farmers that come in. And they're like, and people are like, do we call you like Mr. Parker? I'm like, no, you call me Farmer Cody. And like, I just kind of show up. And like you create this like laid back atmosphere, and we're just working with these plants, and we're working with these fish. Another guy that works for me, his name is Sean. He's fantastic, and like he used to run summer camps and travel like a travel company that would teach kids how to adventure into like wilderness areas. So like we just bring the energy. You come in and then we create this like this excitement about the aquaponics system that gets everyone on board, and we work very closely with the teachers, the administration. So that's kind of what we do, because that's the best way to do it. Like I said, a teacher has to teach, and they don't actually have time to take care of the aquaponics system. They can if they want to, but really carry it we make the most of the system when we are able to take care of the system. So we have a whole ecosystem of schools, and we actually can even have schools compete against each other.
Oh, wow.
And we're all connected. Yeah. So like, it's kind of this whole ecosystem that I'm a part of that I'm able to kind of piece together and make schools even interact with each other and compete with each other. So it really brings it to its fullest.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll say, like, as we kind of wrap up, listeners, we'll include links to Drop the Bee Farms, their Instagram account, their website. But one of the things that I noticed as well when I was looking at it before we started recording was, you know, you also do work with veterans groups. So it's not just schools. It's enabling people who are, you know, needing some, you know, extra outlet for their time. And it looks like, yeah, you partner with veterans groups. They come out, they help farm. And then they donate the produce to local food banks. So I just think this is super cool. And it's, I would hope, Cody, that, you know, we'll keep in touch, but I hope this grows and grows, pun intended. Listeners know I'm terrible with my puns, but like truly across like the US, I would love to see every school have one of these. I think it would just be really, really cool to have students play an active role in their ecosystem. And also like, I'm sure the teachers would have like science teachers would just like have a field day, helping explain. Cause I think it's so, so cool. So Cody, like wrapping things up, like I typically like to ask our guests, you know, the same question, just because I think it's interesting to hear the variety of answers. And so I guess my question to you is, so based on where you're sitting, whether that is, you know, what do they Farmer Cody? Is that what you tell the kids to
tell you? Yeah, you call me Farmer Cody.
From where you're sitting is Farmer Cody, or even just like as somebody like who is observing what's going on in the world, like what is exciting you the most about what you're seeing happening in the ethical and sustainable lifestyle movement going on right now?
I love the push towards like dry goods refilleries and like the entire I love that, because you know that's the difficult thing to do, because that puts a lot of pressure on the customer to be able to, you know, keep going to the same store with their refillable products. I love the idea of companies that their entire business model is just, hey, let's get water back into refillable containers, because you don't have to buy a bottle of water every time you need to take a sip of water. I love the reusable product industry that's starting to unfold, and I think we should take it as far as it can go. The single use product industry is just horrible, and it's so easy for consumers and just regular people to just get caught up in it. The more that these companies are pushing these single use products that help diversify their product, and it's nice in this little cute packaging, but you're buying the packaging as well as the product. Whereas like these dry goods refilleries are like, you're only purchasing the product, and it's up to you to make sure you have the right reusable containers, which is the way we've operated for thousands and thousands of years. And it's not until recently that we plasticized everything, and it's so unhealthy. They always come out with like, oh, now it's BPA that's like in your water bottles, so now it's BPA free, but there's something else. It's just, it's really bad that we package so much of our products. So I'm really excited about that push towards refillable water bottles and dry good distilleries that are kind of popping up in different places. I'm so excited for the future of that, and I think that they're fighting the good fight.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Cody, this has been great. Listeners, like I said, we're going to include links to everything we talked about earlier. You can find Drop the Beet Farms on Instagram, on all the social media accounts, but really encourage you to see what they're doing, because it's a really, really important initiative. Thank you so much for joining us, Cody.
Thank you, Laura. I really appreciate it, and I'm very excited to all the listeners. If you feel like having aquaponics in your school, feel free to reach out, or just YouTube aquaponics. There's plenty of resources out there for you to start getting your own food produced within your home or school, and I look forward to hearing from you guys.
Joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social media. You'll find us on almost everything at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.